This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
Om Saram to our listeners. I am Gulab Bilimoria of Sri Satasai International Organisation of New Zealand, and I offer my most loving and humble pranams at the Lord's feet of our beloved Bhagwan, Sri Satasai Baba. Welcome to this particular program, which is 1118 episode. And today we'll be hearing a discussion on the topic of Gita Vahini. So with the grace of SSIO USA Region 5, has initiated a virtual satsang series beginning a profound journey into the depths of Gita Vahini. This recurring series is set to convene on the first Sunday of each month with Dr. Suresh Govind of Malaysia. So today we'll be hearing episode 17, The Dharma Matrix Connecting the Dots of Inner Wisdom, and at the same time will be episode 18 on the topic of the Dharma Dilemma. So let's hear Ganesh Bhajan and we'll get straight into it.
पशुपति तनया बाल गजानन
पशुपति तनया बाल गजानन
पशुपति तनया बाल गजानन
पशुपति तनया बाल गजानन
तुम हो विघ्न विनाशा गणेशा हे शिव नंदन बाल गजानन
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 विद्या बुद्धि प्रदाता साई गणेशा
सुंदर साई गणेशा
पशुपति तनया बाल गजानन
पशुपति तनया बाल गजानन
तुम हो विघ्न विनाशा गणेशा शिव नंदन बाल गजानन
हे शिव नंदन बाल गजानन
विद्या बुद्धि प्रदाता
विद्या बुद्धि प्रदाता
मंगल कर हे मंगल कर हे
मंगल कर हे मंगल कर हे
सुन
ಸುಂದರ ಸಾಯಿ ಗಣೇಶ ಗಣೇಶ
ಸುಂದರ ಸಾಯಿ ಗಣೇಶ
ಪಶುಪತಿ ತನಯ ಬಾಲ ಗಜಾನನ ತುಮ ಹೋ
ವಿಘ್ನ ವಿನಾಶ. ಸಾಯಿ ರಾಮ್. ಡಿಯರ್ ಬ್ರದರ್ಸ್ ಅಂಡ್ ಸಿಸ್ಟರ್ಸ್, ಥ್ಯಾಂಕ್ಸ್ ಫಾರ್ ಟ್ಯೂನಿಂಗ್ ಇನ್ ಟು ಟುಡೇಸ್ ಎಪಿಸೋಡ್, ಟ್ರಾನ್ಸ್ಫಾರ್ಮ್ ವರ್ಕ್ ಇನ್ ಟು ಇನ್ಸ್ಪೈರ್ಡ್ ವರ್ಕ್, ಅ ಪ್ಯಾರಡೈಮ್ ಶಿಫ್ಟ್. ಸೊ ಲೆಟ್ ಸ್ಟೆಪ್ ಬ್ಯಾಕ್ ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ರೀಕ್ಯಾಪ್ ಅ ಲಿಟಲ್ ಬಿಟ್ ಅಬೌಟ್ ವಾಟ್ಸ್ ಬೀನ್ ಗೋಯಿಂಗ್ ಆನ್ ಓವರ್ ದ ಪಾಸ್ಟ್ ಫ್ಯೂ ಮಂತ್ಸ್. ಸೊ ವಿ ಬೀನ್ ರಿಫ್ಲೆಕ್ಟಿಂಗ್ ಆನ್ ಹೂ ವಿ ಟ್ರೂಲಿ ಆರ್, ದಿ ಆತ್ಮ ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ದ ಬ್ಯೂಟಿಫುಲ್ ಕ್ವಾಲಿಟೀಸ್ ದಟ್ ಡಿಫೈನ್ ಇಟ್. ಸೊ ಇಟರ್ನಲ್, immovable, immeasurable, indestructible, and unmanifest. So these aren't just lofty ideas, they're reminders of the quiet strength and clarity we all carry inside. Then in the last episode, we showed at how this inner wisdom, that is our Atma Dharma, can help guide our choices, especially when things get complicated. But today, we're taking it a step further, because knowing what's right is one thing, actually living it is another. So that's really what took place in the last satsang that we had. And we discussed how we could bring together that sense of purpose into our everyday life. How do we act from a place of stillness, not stress, from love, not recognition? That's what we dive into with Brother Suresh. He helps us explore how to move from doing to being, how to stay grounded, inspired, and aligned with a higher self, even in the most routine moments. So with that, let's get started.
Sai Ram, brother, how are you? Good morning to Sai. You, Malaysia.
Sai Ram, how are you? So nice to hear from you again.
Thank you. Thank you so much, brother. We're doing really well, and we really appreciate it. I know it's early in the morning in Malaysia, and we really, really appreciate you taking the time to do this. And I have to tell you, I'm really, really excited about this one. For our dear listeners, brothers and sisters, we had talked, just going back an episode, we talked about, are we doing our best? And are we doing enough of it? And now we're sort of transitioning to the topic is Atma Dharma. And I would love for you, Brother Suresh, to sort of tee up and stitch those two episodes together for our dear listeners.
Okay, Sanjeev. You see, in any case, we all have to work. Work is the signature of life. If we have life, then the inevitable consequence of that is that work is what we all do, and everyone does it. And how we do the work is what that matters in order to bring productivity and results. So if we do the work from a physical standpoint, just for utilizing the senses, it's very, very superficial. If you do it at the mental level, you'll find your work will be extremely regulated by your emotional downturn or emotional issues and so on. If you are just doing it with an intellectual view, you'll find that you'll be terribly analytical, but sometimes it may not even hit your mark. So most people, when they confine themselves to this, after some time, you find boredom comes in, you'll find limitation coming in. And this is where we come to a roadblock. But the Gita tells us that the most important way to work is utilizing the Atma, or utilizing it from the source of the Atma. We spend so much time in trying to discover the qualities of the Atma. The moment we tap from that reservoir, you'll find a huge amounts of inspiration coming in. So when you tap from the Atma, the work will become eternal, the work will be sustainable, the work will always be based upon very solid foundation, it'll be really doing things to make better people improve, improvement in the people, improvement in the organization, improvement in the world outside. And we, every hour of our day, we will rise up inspired. So they are giving us dimensions of work, but work proceeding from the atmic consciousness brings the matter to a very high level.
That is absolutely wonderful. And you actually went right into the question that I already had answered. So I'll skip to the next one, because I was asking about where the Atma Dharma comes from, right? The Atma Dharma to karma comes from. So let me jump right into one of the slides that was shared during our satsang the last time around. And it was a verse from the Bhagavad Gita, but instead of speaking to the verse, I'll share with you what I took away. And I would love to get your thoughts, because it was really, really insightful. And the key takeaway on that specific that verse was that it was about praise or blame. So it's not about taking praise or blame. And you said something really interesting. You said, you know, as you evolve spiritually, there is sort of less wallowing in this world of blame, and you don't take things personally. And that was something that was really, really hit home to me personally. And I would love for you to sort of expand on that and share with our listeners some context.
Yeah, praise and blame. In other words, when we are living in this world, whenever we act, it will always incur either a praise from someone or we'll get blamed for someone for the things that we do. And most of the time when we do something of this nature, if the consequence of this is like that, and we get attached to praise, for example, then we'll start doing work for the purposes of praise. So when you start doing that, what will happen? We are going for recognition. When we go for recognition, there will come a point when you will not get it at some point, or you will be disappointed. And therefore, your work will become compromised. Like that, if you go and do work and you get continuously blamed, obviously you will be affected. And when you're an affected person, cannot function well. You'll always be focusing on, oh, that guy did this, or this guy did that, or that guy did this. So when we are continuously blaming people for these things, again, our work will be compromised. So the point of the story is that we are trying to see how the work can continuously remain perfect, continuously be executed seamlessly without any of these hindrances in the world outside. So you see, it's a way in which you should work. Work in your life that you should not even praise or blame. We continue to do this because whatever that we do will always invite both of this. But we should not be doing things for both of this. We should be doing this continuously, having the motivation from an inner nature, intrinsic nature, then extrinsic.
This is a beautiful explanation, and this gets us right, Brother Suresh, into, there was a lot of discussion during that satsang around practicing equanimity. And I'm actually looking at that particular slide that just spoke to some of what you're sharing, which is, you know, be unaffected versus indifferent as you're thinking about work. I don't mind versus I don't care about the work. So you're saying, look, do the work, but don't necessarily focus around the outcome and slice it up, etc. Find the, not the external motivation, but find the internal motivation and work from that motivation. Did I kind of capture that correctly? Did I understand that correctly?
Yes, yes. So the idea is that equanimity is a very important thing, because Baba said, only in shanti can buddhi be developed. So only when we are completely, totally peaceful can the lighthouse of intelligence peep out and start gazing out, looking at, analyzing, seeking, searching for the right information for the purposes of making the right decision. So when we make the right decision, we'll get the right experience. So the key point here is that how to remain always peaceful. But if every action is to be met with reaction, which is praise and blame, or somebody throws something at you, or someone throws something at you, and you get affected. You get, when someone criticizes you, you get affected. That doesn't mean, you see, we cannot, we are also not robots. When we do something, when someone scolds you, you will be affected. But the question is, if you're a Gita student or a spiritual student, you, it's okay, you're affected. But instead of those days, you used to brood over it for the weeks and days. But now, yeah, you're affected, but you're bouncing back again. You see, you're a human being. Yeah. There will be an effect. But the, after the effect, just, okay, fine, it doesn't matter. He shouted at me. It's okay, let's move on. After a few minutes, or after 1 hour or 30 minutes, you're back in action. And you're back. So the fact is, the ability to bounce back to your normal state will be faster. That's what this particular sloka means.
Okay. Well, I you described it, but brother, I still sort of struggle with this, right? You know, this developing this intrinsic motivation.
Motivation. Yeah.
Yeah. How do you actually channelize that? How do you, because we all used to sort of working towards goals, and I'm speaking on, you know, and this came up in during our satsang as well. How do you develop this sort of intrinsic motivation?
So you come back home tired, exhausted, you reach home and you just want to collapse somewhere, have a cup of tea, and then suddenly your friend telephones you, hey, where are you at home? Sharik, why not we meet at the club and let's go for tennis? Hey, sure. And then you jump and change your outfit, where carry your tennis racket, and you go out of your house. And you go and play 1.5 hours of tennis. You're taking effort to drive the car, park the near the club, take the racket, play the game, and come back.
Yeah.
And then you say, what is your motivation to do that? You know, are you getting paid to do that? No, why are you doing it? Because you just do it because you love tennis. You just for the sake of it, you know, and you enjoy. Okay, does it matter whether you lose? Doesn't matter. I just want to have a game and refresh myself and feel good and feel energized. And that's it. So therefore, I'm not looking for praise. I'm not looking for recognition. I'm not looking for name. I enjoy. That means tennis becomes a hobby. Whenever I'm free, I play tennis because it relaxes me. Now, if I have the same attitude in work, where work becomes a hobby, where everything in life becomes a, I'm just doing it because I love doing it. That's why Baba said, bhakti for the sake of bhakti. Sorry, love for the sake of love alone is bhakti. So having love just for the sake of love, you love the work. I just enjoy the work. That's it. So this is what is meant by intrinsic motivation. Right. When you're motivated without any external pull or push, then you'll find that you are a person that you don't need anything else. You're just on the go because you just want to do it. Most people are ordained or most people are controlled and regulated by these external things. The less and less external pulls you, you're a man of power. Look at all the great things, great people who did those things. Mahatma Gandhi, Martin Luther King, all those people, all the great scientists. Any person who has achieved anything in life can only be because of the fact that he's intrinsically motivated, he's completely focused on the goal, and he's not terribly bothered about what the world is thinking about it. He's in a state of just the thrill of discovering and showing something in the world where they leave behind a legacy. So such people are people who do wondrous actions. Bhagavan is trying to create that or give us that opportunity to do that using the service attitude. When we have service, when we do service at work or when we do selfless service, the whole idea is to get into this mode, equanimity, peaceful, happy. So there's an orientation for our way of working where we work without any wanting results, any recognition, any name. So the power of selflessness comes inside. When we are completely selfless and totally doing things for the sake of doing things, we become enjoy. We enjoy life. When we enjoy life in that peace and bliss, lots of amazing intelligence develops. In that intelligence, you'll find powerful decisions are made in which you find you add luster to the work that you do.
Now, this is bringing back to me the image that you used when you said, this is all coming back to me now. You actually used the example of, I believe, the tree and the flower. And what I took away from that, brother, is look at the tree, look at the flower, right? It's blooming, it's providing shade, but it's not necessarily asking anything in return, right? There is no external motivation. Did I? Is that the context which where you shared those analogies? They're very powerful.
Yeah, they just do the work and they're not interested. They just do it. The nature, you know, like whales. People kill whales now and they go around killing whales. And there are people who go out there, save our whales, save our whales. So you stop and ask them, why do you want to save these whales? They say, whales, I want my next generation to see these whales. It's the most beautiful creature. And the whales swim away. But you know something? Kill all these whales. Do you know that the whole ecosystem of the ocean will be affected? Why? Because whales go swimming down right at the bottom of the ocean and then take in the planktons. And then when they come up to the surface, they gush out all the plankton. So they are one way of bringing the planktons out into the surface. And that's when the smaller fishes eat these planktons. And that keeps the ecosystem. You see, it's just doing it. It's not that he has to do this much of plankton or he's getting recognized. He's just doing it because that maintains the ecosystem. So this is what in the Gita, when you go to chapter 3, next time they'll be talking about the yajna spirit. These are the basis for us to develop an attitude. But in life, man must know how to give. Keep on giving, you find you restore back the ecosystem. Now the problem here is everybody, what is it for me? What should if I do, what can I get? If I come here, what can I? If I do this work, what is it that I gain? This is the only two-legged, tailless and hornless animal called man who's asking this question. Cows don't do it, dogs don't do it, birds don't do it, animal kingdom don't do it, plant kingdom don't, only human beings. What is it for me? If I do this, what can I get? Because we ask this question, the whole world has now collapsed. Economy has collapsed. Everything has collapsed. And we are now living in such a dark age of terrible situations because people are asking, what is it for me? What do I gain? This reversal is what the Gita is now asking.
Okay. So I wanted to bring up, thank you, brother, for that. I wanted to bring up one last thing that you said that actually really sort of resonated. And by the way, by you answering some of these questions personally, I'm going to make an effort and then report back on more of an effort and report back on the next podcast about some of these things, right? About where to find some of the internal motivation and act with that. So I'll give a full report on that. One thing that you said, and you probably remember the context very well, which is the last verse that we went through, but I'll give you the thing that the key takeaway. You said, look, real life, we, as in, you know, because you use the example of this, you know, two-legged man, we love to avoid suffering, love, 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 love to avoid suffering. But if we can use that to answer this question, how can I improve? How can I create a better version of myself? And keep that in mind, then every problem is going to become a solution that will actually drive expansiveness. Do you remember
Okay.
that? Yeah.
Yes. So you look, one easy way of reading the Bhagavad Gita, all of us take the book, we just read the passage, just interpret it, and that's it. We are done. Study circles can be conducted like that. Just read and understand. Why did we take so much of pain and what years of work? Now this is the 5th year. Why do we do this? Why do we dive deep? And then there's a group of you all who have to come and listen, prepare. Then you take so much effort in making the slides, so much of them podcast. Why do we do that? Is it not suffering? But look, if it is not, if it is only suffering, if we do not know the end outcome. The person who's practicing in the gym, muscle, and is really, he has to go and do the push-ups and all that, the trainer pushes him. He is going through, he's enduring that suffering because he knows the end outcome of that is that the muscle bulging biceps in his hands. So if you know the end outcome and you know it and this is what you want to do, then there's no suffering. The fact of creating, going to the center, going all these things is creating better versions of ourselves. For what? Because the end result is that we want better experience. We want to improve the quality of life. We want to make sure people are. See, you have that bigger picture. The whole problem here is that we don't have a large picture. You don't have a large goal. You don't have a bigger vision. The problem in life is that when we suffer, when we don't have those things standing in front of us, you'll find that whatever you do, even inspired work, you'll find becomes a chore. Why? Because you don't have. Yet a sweeper who's sweeping the road every day will find it inspiration. Why? Because he says that unless I keep the roads clean, the image of this country will not be good. So you see, he has got that image in his mind and he works with that attitude. That particular mundane work becomes inspired work. You see, whereas if someone else can be doing something more inspiring than that, But his mind is so shallow and hollow that the very work becomes a chore and it keeps shifting. It's all the way you look at it, and that's what the Gita is saying. That's what the whole scripture is saying. How to enjoy work, because 70% of our time is in the office, 70% of our time is in the school. We do spend lots of time doing things, so why don't you do it happily, joyously, with a great inspiration, because you want to contribute. Once you have that attitude to contribute, you are standing away from the competition, because most people come to take, but we have come to give. When we come to give, like the cows that have come to give, it is worshipped. Is it not? That's why we have many festivals that celebrate the presence of the cow, because the cow is gives from morning to, from young to old, the cow gives and gives and gives. It is this two-legged creature who suddenly decides to work, study for the purposes of getting. Getting a job to get more. Get, grab. And how then can a caterpillar become a butterfly? Tell me. So it's a giving. That's it, the whole renaissance that we must now create in the world. Create a culture of giving.
Beautiful. This is beautiful. Thank you. This is absolutely lovely. So brothers and sisters, we are going to continue down this journey and talk about this in a lot more detail on Sunday, June 4th in the evening. With that, Brother Suresh, first of all, I wanted to thank you not just for this podcast and all the podcasts before, but for creating the opportunity for us to evolve through the satsangs that we've been doing every month. And with your guidance and facilitation, it's been an absolute joy. With that, I'll turn it over to you for the last word. If there's anything that you wanted to add, and in particular, is there anything that you wanted to say about the next episode? And we will do a wrap after that. Thank you.
You see, I think the last thing I just want, you see, you can write a thesis on swimming, you can have chapter and after chapters, you can write all the technical details about swimming, but if you just don't want to get into the swimming pool, how will we enjoy this swim itself? Like that, we know the theory of Raga Gita, we know all these things, but we have to put it into practice and feel every day that inspirational surge that motivates us to work. Once we get into that platform, we are in an inspirational zone. In that inspirational zone, a lot of possibilities can take place. A lot of potentials can happen. A lot of blossoming can take place. That is the place where the birth of the new self can take place, in that inspirational zone. Thank you.
Thank you, brother.
I hope you enjoyed this particular episode. Saram to you all. We'll see you next week.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.